This podcast is brought to you by Tropos, weather and forecast for humans. No dew points or ads, just information you can act on. Get it now at troposweather.com or search for Tropos on the iOS App Store.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Sean.
How's it going?
Totally great. I'm here in Denver.
How's the altitude doing?
Oh, it's tall, and I'm thirsty.
Fair enough. So, you are the managing director, or development director now,
yes,
of our Stockholm office?
That is correct. I was the managing director for the past three or so years, and now I'm the development director, which is like managing director, but totally different. Yeah, it's more of a mentorship role, which is rather fun, I feel.
More of a mentorship role, than you're spending more time mentoring, or you're just there to be mentored?
I'm spending more time mentoring.
Okay, cool. So, and are you... You were in New York for a while, right?
I was in Boston for 4 years, and I'm in New York for the past 3 weeks.
Right, that's why I'm being like short-term, a little while.
Yeah, so I'm in New York for 2 months in total, working on a local American project.
Cool. What kind of technologies are you using for it?
Oh, this one is entirely in Ruby.
Oh.
And
that's a terrible segue into Django.
It is. I'm glad you brought this up. The last project I was in on in Stockholm was in Python, and I've been working with a colleague in New York named George on reviewing his Django pull requests.
So how has that been?
Oh, it's been great. Python's a fun change from Ruby. Like everything about Python is very similar to Ruby but different. It's like these two identical communities developed without ever looking at each other. And it's very identical and also subtly different.
Right.
Python itself is not purely object-oriented. It's not a small talk re-implemented, unlike Ruby.
Right.
And so that leads to a lot of just bare functions being defined and being prioritized in interesting ways.
Yeah, that was one thing I've always found weird whenever I write Python, is that map is just a random bare function and not a instance method on the array. I mean, of course you can map over multiple things, but still.
Yeah, exactly. And but it still is object-oriented underneath, because you can map over, like you said, you can map over multiple things, and it's based on it's just based on interface. And so you pass it something that responds to the correct method, and it will map over it.
Yeah.
And so it still is object-oriented, but it exposes a functional perspective on top of it.
Mm-hmm.
And just like that focus on functions is interesting.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, right. So I think one of the things that subtly demonstrates the difference in the opinions of those two languages in terms of object orientation, mm-hmm, is that in Ruby we have symbol to proc.
Yes.
But we have no convenient way to pass a method on the object doing the iterating, pass an instance method as a lambda. But then in Python, it's very easy to pass that, but there is no convenient way to do the equivalent of symbol to proc.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yeah. They solved very similar problems in the exact opposite way.
Yeah.
I feel like list is, join is one of the biggest examples of solving the exact same thing in the opposite way.
Mm-hmm.
In Ruby, join is a method on array that takes a string. And in Python, join is a method on string that takes an array. Like, they just didn't look at each other.
No, and it's fair.
And then that falls into Django, where...
What? My dog?
No, not your dog.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought we were talking about my dog now.
The thing your dog is named after.
Oh, yeah. That, right. Let's forget about that.
Yeah, so Django, web framework. Very similar to Rails, came out very same time as Rails. Different target audience. Rails was built to build Basecamp, whereas Django was built to build a news website.
Mm-hmm.
And it was built like in a more object-oriented manner on the controller and routing side.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't done a ton of stuff with Django. I think my two biggest exposures to it were... that image that went around a while back that was like the Django core team next to the Rails core team. And it was like a bunch of white guys in button downs. And then the Rails core team was like Aaron with his mullet and David in front of his race car. But then George gave a talk at RailsConf 2 years ago now, I think, about Django's form objects and how this in Django, for example, they have the same object that is responsible for building the markup of the form, and then it's also the object that is going to be ultimately responsible for deserializing what the form submits.
Exactly, exactly. And it's just a whole bunch of objects on the front end, if you will, the router to the controller to the views. Also, that's another place where Django and Rails didn't look at each other.
Right.
Django uses the word view to mean what Rails calls a controller. And what Rails calls a view, Django calls a template.
Well, and so does everything else ever.
Well, like, yes.
I think Rails is just flat out wrong on that one.
Yeah, I could see that.
And then Django, right? Each action on a controller is a separate object, right?
Yeah. So an object... So let's talk about like the generic class-based views to like be very pedantic. That's the part I'm focusing on. And there you have an object that represents a resource, and it responds to methods like get and post and put and update, or not update, delete. It's basically an HTTP endpoint object. And so the methods are the actual verbs that HTTP responds to.
So how is this not miserable if it's not tons of magic DSL for everything?
Inheritance is the answer. Template method and inheritance. Inheritance, of course, is miserable.
Yes.
But despite that, so there are many very useful class-based views. So you have the root class-based view, which is just called view. It's a pretty good name. But then you get other views like create view and update view. And so you would say that the route for an article, like articles, responds to the create view. And if you do a post to that, it knows how to handle that. But if you do a delete to that, it doesn't know how to handle it because it only understands post. And so there's that. And then once you inherit from create view, so you have like your article create view inherits from create view, you just configure it. You say, I'm creating an article. Actually, that's all you would say. I'm creating an article here.
Okay.
And it handles there's a long method there called post that handles actually creating the form, saving that to the database, all that kind of stuff, based off your configuration.
Sure. Well, and I was being just pedantic when I was saying, how is this not miserable without magic DSLs? Because magic DSLs are miserable.
Yes.
but no, actually, that does lead into a good question, though. So one of the most common things that, for example, you would use the DSLs for in Rails would be things like authentication.
Mm-hmm.
So making sure that current user is set, and then if we cannot find a current user, kicking them back and putting that in a module, mix that in, have a before filter, or before action now, because some people like to rename methods for no apparent reason. So how would you do that in Django?
Right, and so another bizarre fact of Python is that it allows multiple inheritance. But it and Ruby both have mixins.
Mm-hmm.
In Django, they call them mixins, and you write them as if it were multiple inheritance. And so you could inherit from a create view and from a login required view.
Okay.
Or just a login required mixin. And that would add in that kind of authentication requirement.
And so you would call check authentication and call super in get?
Yeah, but it's handled for you, so yeah.
Okay.
But then there's another interesting property of Python is that it has a built-in macro syntax, macro language, where you can have functions that gets passed to other functions. Whew, how do I want to describe this? You can mark a function as being decorated.
Okay.
They are, in fact, called decorators.
Right.
And so you can say, def post, right, if you want to define the post method. And you can above that say at authenticated, and it decorates the post method with the authenticated method.
Okay.
And so the authenticated method actually takes a function as its argument,
mm-hmm.
and returns a function as its value. It's a function to function. So that basically makes it a macro.
Yeah, that's just interesting, though. I mean, I guess it's more of a Lisp. Well, Lisp is cheating, but because in languages that aren't Lisp. I guess I always think of a macro as something at compile time that takes an AST and returns an AST.
Right.
And I suppose that is just ultimately a similar way to achieve that, though. If you take a function, return a function, which in Lisp those are, of course, the exact same thing. But
yes. But yeah, these are runtime macros. So
okay.
Really, decorator is the correct word. We'll just stick to that. Yeah, and so you can decorate functions, and so you can decorate functions and classes.
Okay.
So you can decorate a class by saying, you know, at authenticated or at authentication required. And because it is a function, you can pass parameters to it. So you can actually say at authentication required admin, or like pass the string admin, and only admins are allowed, for example.
Right. And prototypes aside, assuming JavaScript had real inheritance, ultimately Python's object model comes very close to JavaScript's, at least compared to something like Ruby, right? Where your constructor is just a regular function and your object is ultimately just a hash with dot notation. That may happen to have a function as an instance property, and that's how you get methods.
I mean, yes, but also no. It's certainly not Smalltalk, and it's also not self. It's something in between. Like Python, I don't know when Python got classes. I don't know if they always did. I don't think Python
didn't always have them.
Yeah, I think it was just originally just a bunch of functions and modules.
I think that was why they went so far with Python 3 was they took that opportunity to then really try and think through the class system.
Actually, I now remember when they added classes. I was a young programmer, and it was controversial.
As opposed to now?
Now I'm a less young programmer.
Okay.
And it's less controversial that they added classes. Yeah, and so they added those classes, and it's an extension on top of the existing functions and dictionary object. But it's not, like, when I write Python, I don't keep that in mind.
Right. No, of course. Of course.
Whereas when I write JavaScript, I know that I have an object and it is a dictionary and they are the same thing. And if I want to manipulate this object, I'm going to manipulate it in the same fashion that I would manipulate a dictionary.
Right.
Whereas in Python, that's not my thought. My thought is I have an object and I'm going to manipulate it as an object.
Fair enough. And then in Python, you can also define objects to be falsy.
Yes.
Like very midnight.
Midnight is falsy?
Midnight is falsy in Python.
Okay.
There's this long-standing issue, which I think is actually technically still open, of people begging to make midnight not falsy, because the idiomatic way to check if a function returned a value isn't to compare it to none, it's to just if that value.
Right.
But then if you're having a function that returns a date that might be none, you actually do need to explicitly check it for none, or you can never return midnight.
That's right. That seems like a problem.
Yeah, it's a little magic.
Like I'm annoyed that in Ruby I cannot define arbitrary things to be falsy.
Right.
But maybe Python has proved that it's a fine thing to do. Just don't allow custom falsiness.
Well, that was, you know, in the argument of like returning a truthy or falsy value, or whether we should return true or false in Ruby, one of the arguments I used to kind of make for always returning true or false is that if you're doing not value, you also happen to give that object the ability to define its falsiness. But I also then couldn't ever come up with a time that I would want to do that I wouldn't just be like, oh my god, this is so super implicit and magical, and like the person, if there's a bug in this, the person who has to debug it is going to hate me forever.
Yeah, I mean, that's told you after writing Python after writing Ruby for 10 years now, I am totally fine not being able to define my own falsiness.
Yeah. I guess the only case I can think of that would kind of sort of make sense is just because of, so with the Turing students, one of the problems I continuously have with them early on is trying to convince them to stop checking for user being signed in as if current user, and to have a method called signed in. And so then when you introduce your guest object, right, I suppose if you do already have a code base where you're doing if current user as your way of determining it being signed in, making guest falsy would kind of sort of solve that, even though that's not actually good, but as a Band-Aid.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It is a Band-Aid. But Band-Aids are... I have a lot of respect for Band-Aids in programming.
Yeah.
Like, as a new user of a programming language, I don't want to know that I have to define public static void main in order to just try printing hello world, right? I just want to try something, and Band-Aids are good for that. Band-Aids need to be ripped off when you are collaborating.
Yeah, definitely. Well, see, I think you're always collaborating.
Okay.
Like, the stuff that we do, that's for the benefit of other people includes you next week.
Right.
And, like, I actually think on solo toy projects, the kind that you are going to drop for a month at a time and then come back and tinker with for a few days and then go away for another month or two, I think, like, documentation and good commit messages and good code practice are even more important there, because that's where you're most likely to not have context next time you come back.
That's true. And the compromise I make for those projects, because I have far too many of those, is I do not compromise on tests. I write great tests as if I were writing a real program. I write full tests, and the code is crap, and I just want to get the prototype out. But you know, I work on it every couple days or every couple weeks. So I want to come back and run the tests and see, like, okay, this is failing.
Yeah.
I can now look into why.
Oh, and well, that's always a great way to get, if you know you're not going to be coming back, right? Leave your next failing test.
Yes.
And then you have the breadcrumbs.
Yeah. Well, so what I usually do is I write a full test of what the prototype should do when it's done.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's always a failing test unless it's done. And when it's done, then it's no longer, then the prototype is done and I can actually try it.
Right. That's another interesting difference between the two communities too, right? Mm-hmm. Is Ruby, huge focus on testing.
Yes.
And gosh, library authors are terrible at writing documentation.
Yes.
And in Python, right, it's kind of the opposite. Docs totally. Are taken super seriously.
Yeah, totally opposite. And to be very clear, like you can write great tests in Python and using Django.
Yeah.
There are lots of good tools.
And I'm not saying people don't do it, but
yeah.
It's like, I guess to put it another way, in Ruby, a library is not considered to be done unless it has tests, and in Python, a library is not considered to be done unless it has docs.
I totally agree with that. And I feel like it is changing on the Python side,
okay.
But not on the Ruby side.
Changing in that?
In that they're respecting tests more.
But not docs less. Well, then that's good.
Yes. And there is also the compromise of there's a way to write comments that are executable tests.
Right. Yeah, Rust has that too, and that is the coolest thing, that you can make it so that your documented examples
mm-hmm.
are actually correct.
Yeah, that seems pretty useful. I recently finished a Ruby library. I don't normally finish things.
Yes.
I wrote a whole bunch of examples, but for each one I had to... In the comments, I wrote a whole bunch of examples. And for each one, I had to manually try it out and see whether it worked.
Why don't we write this?
Shouldn't
be that hard.
Shouldn't be that hard.
No, grab any comment. That's, like
I have other projects. They have failing
tests. Well, no, of course. I'm just saying, if we assume that the code is always indented 4 spaces or something like that, right? We just grab all of the comments attached to a method and...
Right. Well,
parsing like what the code is, which lines are code shouldn't be too hard.
Yeah. So I used Yard as the format
right.
language, and so yeah, I think I actually have not looked into this, but I think Yard provides a way to extract the documentation into bits, and so you can get like all the example code.
Yeah. I'm just thinking because one of the things that we are doing in Rails 5 is we added our own test runner, and this would be a useful thing to do for that,
mm-hmm.
and maybe push back upstream into a separate gem so that RSpec and Minitest could use it if they choose to.
We don't need another test runner, just to state my opinion.
I also agree with that opinion. Okay. I remember bringing it up. I don't remember what the actual answer was, but as to like why aren't we just trying to push this stuff upstream to Minitest?
Yeah.
But basically, we're trying to add things like run by line.
Okay.
Number, you know, like an RSpec where it's RSpec whatever thing colon line number, and we're trying to add that to Minitest. And I don't know if that was just rejected as an upstream feature. In which case, yeah, then we have no other choice. But
right. But to fork it and then take over the
right.
main one. Because why would that be rejected? That's foolish, I feel.
Yeah, I don't know if we've tried to push it upstream or if we're even just... We might also just be planning to push it upstream.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
And then I think we also just want it to be Rails test, partially just because we're trying to unify what commands go through Rails and what commands go through Rake.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to... Oh, and with Rake tasks, right, you can't really take arguments in a non-stupid way.
Yeah.
So that's the other thing, is that then we can take arguments in this command.
Since the arguments were added to a Rake task by a human being who's a great programmer, I just want to clarify, it's not a stupid way. It's just the best way we could come up with.
I'm sorry. Yes, that's a better way to phrase it.
But yeah, and then on the Ruby side, like documentation's okay. I feel like Yard is great and RDoc is very nice.
Yeah.
But I never go to the documentation for a Ruby project. I instead just read the source code.
Yeah.
I
mean, I think that happens to developers in general. Like, I think that's a gauge of experience level, because as people get more experience, I feel like they learn to trust docs less and just go source diving more quickly.
There's also a statement about open source developers, right? Like, Java developers don't even have the luxury most of the time.
Right.
Whereas I've read the Ruby C source code fairly often.
Well-written C code.
Well, it's not well-written, but
it's easy. It's easy readable. To read.
It's definitely readable. Yeah.
At least as long as you avoid the VM.
Right.
Actually, if you might be interested in this too. So, you know ampersand block?
Yes.
Right, and so if you're just capturing the block as a proc to delegate to something else, and mm-hmm. so you're just doing ampersand block, mm-hmm. we should skip the proc allocation.
Okay.
And so I did this in JRuby, and I'm trying to do it in MRI. The only reason it's possible in JRuby, though, is because eval is treated as a keyword and not a method in JRuby. Mm-hmm. But we can't do that in MRI. So we can't really do it at the compiler level, so we're more or less going to have to do it at runtime.
Right.
And what we're thinking of doing is, well, just to see if this is even possible, because we can't actually do it this way, but right now what we're trying to do is, when we're setting up that function, if we take a block argument, we actually stick, if there was a block, instead of doing the proc conversion right there, instead we stick qundefined in its place. And then in getLocal, because right now qundefined has no definition of any meaning in a local variable, and so right. then in getLocal, we are checking to see if it's qundefined, and if so, instantiating the proc object.
Huh.
And that would only then matter if it does not have an ampersand in front of it. But of course, we're adding a branch to get local, which is currently a branchless instruction and probably one of the most hotspot instructions in the VM. So, of course, we can't actually do it that way. But
why can eval not be a keyword in MRI?
Because it's not, and
if you're changing MRI, that might be the thing to change. But that's not a backwards compatible difference, right?
Right, like, that would be now that said, me personally, if you are aliasing eval and then calling your alias, I don't care. You shouldn't mm-hmm. do that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't care about breaking your app.
Right, but it's totally valid to... Oh, I see. Yeah.
And this would also have to apply to instance eval and class eval. All of the eval flavors mm-hmm. would need to be treated as keywords to do it at the compiler level.
Mm-hmm. That's another place where Python got it right. Lots of the Python syntax is more ugly than Ruby,
mm-hmm.
but it's certainly more consistent, and the keywords, the keyword arguments, like, it fits the rest of the everything.
Yeah. Yeah, the one thing that always that always irks me to no end when I'm writing Python is memoization.
Yes.
As opposed to at or equals, it's if not self.hasAdder whatever self.adder equals return thing.adder. But
you should use a decorator.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah. So Django comes with a decorator from Memoize, but it's not called Memoize, which means I do not remember the name of it. and then there's a list of It's called a library of decorators, but really it's a wiki page with a whole bunch of code you can copy and paste. It's like a library. And one of those is Memoize.
Huh.
So I recommend that.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about with Django? Seems like it's a cool framework.
It's a cool framework. I highly respect the way that they did the routing, the controllers. If you're frustrated with Rails, check that out. See if you like it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's it.
All right. Cool. Well, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
Show notes for this episode can be found at bikeshed.fm.
Ratings and reviews on iTunes are much appreciated.
If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at hosts@bikeshed.fm. You can find us on Twitter at @_bikeshed, or you can leave a comment on the website.
Thanks for listening to Bike Shed. See you next time.